Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. As I said at the top of the show, this is Homeless People's, it will be Homeless People's Memorial Day, Homeless Persons Memorial Day tomorrow. And at Mount Vernon Square, do I have it right?
Downtown at the Inner Harbor.
At the Inner Harbor, I'm sorry. I'll let Kevin describe that in a moment. They'll be having the memorial service, reading all the names. We will read the names today at the end of this hour of 104 people that we know who died because of homelessness in Baltimore City. And that's just Baltimore City. And those are just the ones we know. My producer, Mark Gunnery, was talking with the woman who runs the homeless program for homeless youth in Baltimore. He'll send me the name, so I have that right and her name. And what she said to him when he was there was, well, these are the people we know of. There could be another 50 or more people who died homeless, and they just weren't part of any shelter. They never went anywhere, and they just died. We don't know the exact number. But there are at least 104 people have died in our own city of Baltimore, not counting the counties around us, but Baltimore City, 104 people because they were homeless and out of homelessness. So we're joined here in studio by Kevin Lindemood. Kevin Lindemood has been in the studio many times before. He is president and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless since 2011 and began his career with them as an outreach worker 20 years ago, dedicated his life to working with the homeless. Kevin, good to have you back in the studio. Welcome.
Good evening, Mark. Good to be here.
Bonnie Lane is with us. She's a local activist who has firsthand experience of homelessness, a member of Be More Housing for All, a grassroots campaign of people experiencing homelessness, on the editorial board of Word on the Street, Baltimore's New Street newspaper, and a member of the local Face of Homelessness Speakers Bureau. And Damian Housing is with us as well. He is currently without housing and is also an active member of Be More Housing for All and the Face of Homelessness Speakers Bureau and Word on the Street. And Damian, welcome to the show as well. Good to have you here.
Good afternoon.
And we're about to be joined by Dennis Dorsch, who is a retired United Methodist minister who remains actively involved with the United Methodist Church. He started several outreach and service ministries for people experiencing homelessness that continue to this day, and is an active member of the Baltimore United Congregations and SHARP, local coalitions of service providers, faith communities, individuals working to raise consciousness about structural solutions to homelessness. And welcome all. It's good to have you in the studio. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com to share your thoughts on the air. Kevin, good to have you in the studio, all of you.
Thanks so much for your perennial focus on Homeless Persons Memorial Day, Mark. Much appreciated.
It's important. I think the extent of it that we don't really understand in this city.
Right. Well, tomorrow, as you mentioned, is December 21st. It's the first day of winter. It's the longest night of the year. Communities all over the country recognize nationally this day as Homeless Persons Memorial Day to remember people known to have experienced homelessness who died during the previous year. As you know, Mark, homelessness is hazardous to your health. It causes health problems. It exacerbates existing illnesses. If you're sick, you're likely to get sicker, and it seriously complicates treatment and continuity of care, leading to rates of premature mortality that are 3 to 4 times higher than those experienced in the general population. The average age of death for someone living on the streets, any guesses? 47 years old. Between 42 and 52, right in there, 47 years old. People dying far too young, preventable deaths.
So let me talk to our guests. If we've not met before, it's good to have you both in the studio, all three of you in the studio along with Kevin. Tell us, first of all, I just want to get for our listeners, your stories, who you are, your stories of your own homelessness. Bonnie, can I start with you?
Sure.
Bonnie Lane. Tell us about what happened to you. Why were you homeless? How long were you homeless?
I was homeless on and off for 12 years. It started in northern Michigan, and I was a victim of domestic violence and became homeless for that reason. And I got everything back together for a while, and then I wound up in Baltimore. And I actually was a pharmacy tech, and I was working 40 hours a week. And then my hours were sliced down to 15. And about 6 months later, I couldn't afford – I was just renting a room at that time, but I couldn't afford – the bills. So that's how I became homeless most recently.
What was it like when you said, all of a sudden you said you were cut from 40 hours to 15 and then had to go down to renting a room, and when you realized you were losing that room?
I really didn't know what to do at first. You know, I kind of had a bit of a breakdown and I wound up, you know, at Healthcare for the Homeless. And then I met some people, and At one point, I slept on a bench in the park downtown. I've slept in my car. I mean, it's quite, you know, it's real reality check when you lose everything.
I think people who have not experienced this, the idea that of what it just might feel like just emotionally, knowing that all of a sudden the bottom has just dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you were involved in anything illicit, but because the economic bottom fell out.
Exactly.
And Damien, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us. and what about you? I mean, what
do you? In my case, I was I had lost my wife. She was killed by a drunk driver, and had taken a little bit of time off. And during that time, a misunderstanding at my alma mater, where I went to college, led to an arrest for something I didn't do. But by the time the charges were dropped and all that stuff, I was homeless. And but I didn't handle it very well, of course, because afterwards I racked up a very long history of petty shoplifting convictions. But
when you were homeless?
While I was homeless, yeah.
And so you spent time in jail?
Oh, yes.
For that?
Oh, yes.
So talk a bit about that. What happened to you? You ended up homeless because of a false charge was against you. You went to jail waiting trial, and then.
Yeah, well, luckily I was actually only behind bars for the false charge for a few days, but just because of what was going on with my life at the time, I didn't have any savings and all that stuff, and I'd lost my job and lost the ability to get a job because probably by accident the police had taken my part of the arrest was a seizure of my property, and in that property was my birth certificate and some other things. So losing the job I had, I wasn't able to replace it without replacing the ID, which was a lot of work.
You need ID to get ID.
You need ID to
get ID.
And the period of time was actually pretty quick. It's probably about 30 days because I was not. Yeah, it was around 30 days of time between that arrest and when I finally was essentially homeless. I mean, I blew through what little savings I had, as I mentioned, which wasn't much, like I said. I had taken time off from both grad school and from work, which was the right thing to do for my mental health at the time, but maybe not financially correct.
You're homeless now.
I am now homeless, yes.
So where do you sleep?
Well, last night I did go into a shelter as I commented, just to shower. I usually camp out, and the major reason is because I'm allergic to cigarette smoke, and I get sick if I go into shelters. And
people smoke in shelters?
Well, occasionally, yes. The rules are that they don't. You must stand in line to wait to get in, and they're all smoking in line. I get sick. I mean, when I say I get sick, I get sick. As for the question, for the answer for last night, yes, I did sleep in a shelter last night. But since this new journey of homelessness, I've generally been just camping out somewhere because, I mean, it's the only way to stay relatively healthy.
And Reverend Deutsch, thanks for joining us. Good to have you in the studio. And a retired United Methodist minister. So talk about your service on this. How did you start getting involved with?
I originally became involved because when I was very young, my father worked in Baltimore City as an accountant, and he would have me come down to work with him on Saturdays. We'd have lunch, and he always got an extra meal. And we'd walk up into the alley behind his place of business, and he would sit down and give the meal to a homeless person who was there. That was my introduction to working with the homeless, and I've been doing that ever since, wherever I lived. In Washington, D.C., for example, 18 years ago, we started a program of taking meals, blankets, clothing into the center of D.C. every Sunday night. And even though I'm retired, they're still doing that ministry, feeding 150, 200 people who are living on the streets, not in shelters, between the Capitol building and the White House. And it's a very ironic thing to at times see all the limousines pulling up for a state dinner at the White House, and you're sitting there with 20 or 30 homeless people half a block away. The need just keeps increasing. From the time I was little till now, unfortunately, every year it seems like the need gets worse.
I mean, homelessness is growing.
Absolutely, and don't believe the rumors to the contrary, Mark. The rumors of the demise of homelessness, unfortunately, are greatly exaggerated. But you do have some individuals and organizations nationally that are taking point-in-time data and enumerating people, and then very appropriately trying to house people and then claiming that they've reduced homelessness by a certain percentage. I liken it to emptying a full bathtub with a cup and not turning off the water faucet. So you're not counting the number of people in this economy that are experiencing homelessness in greater and greater numbers, including non-traditional populations, women, children, entire intact families. Children, in fact, are the fastest growing subset of the homeless population. I understand at the top of the year you're going to be doing a story on the growth among homeless youth,
right.
a huge problem in our community.
So I mean, it seems what I've read, and then we'll open the phones here at 410-319-8888. You can bring your own stories about your own families, your thoughts about homelessness, what we should be doing about it in a place like Baltimore City, in a place like Maryland, in the United States. And many of us think that you can end homelessness, and we should end it. How do we end it is the question. Were you about to say something, Kevin?
I was just going to talk a moment about the service, and Reverend Dorsch will be among three ministers in town that will be co-officiating the service. But Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake will join us, and will be part of the ceremony. City Council President Jack Young, Mary Pat Clark has been there for the past couple of years, and she will be there again this year. Jeff Singer, my predecessor at Healthcare for the Homeless and a local activist, will be there to read names. Local musician Claire Anthony will be there. We expect a couple of hundred of our fellow citizens down at the Inner Harbor, at the Inner Harbor Amphitheater at 5 p.m. tomorrow on December 21st, remembering that the 104 individuals and frankly, the untold number of people that we don't know about, the unknown, we always light one candle for the unknown individual whose name no one remembers, perhaps. We'll remember those individuals tomorrow for Homeless Persons Memorial Day.
And we'll remember them tonight on the air here by reading all the names at the end of this program. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts. Lieutenant David Clemens, is it? You're on the air.
Yes. Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very well. Welcome.
Good. I want to thank you for bringing attention to such a terrible, terrible situation that we have on our streets. And I would also like to bring attention to the situation of homeless veterans, which there should never be a homeless veteran. But unfortunately, there are men and women who serve our great nation and then return home to become homeless due to a number of issues such as post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma, as well as substance abuse. And that's what we're here for, MCVET, Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. And we're at 301 North High Street in downtown Baltimore.
Just around the corner from Healthcare for the Homeless, and a very strong partner in this work, Lieutenant.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad you very much.
And it's a huge issue. I know that the Baltimore Station, whose clinical director is a dear friend of mine, Vietnam vet, Woody Curry. They deal with, 85% of the men in that program are vets who fought in wars from Korea to the wars we're fighting now. Homeless vets, drug addicted vets. I mean, it's something that's a huge piece of this.
And we'll indeed be remembering at least 10 veterans on that list tomorrow. And Lieutenant, if you know the names of others that we don't yet have on our list, please get us those names, and we'll make sure they're remembered. You're absolutely right. Homelessness among veterans tends to increase after each military engagement, and certainly now there are an increasing number of veterans returning from conflicts overseas who are experiencing homelessness, men and women, for all of the reasons that the lieutenant mentioned and others. There's been a strong stated commitment from the Veterans Administration that we can end veteran homelessness in 5 years. Unfortunately, though the Veterans Administration is certainly trying hard, there simply aren't enough housing resources, supportive services to dramatically reduce the rates among homeless veterans that we're seeing at this time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for bringing attention to that fact. One thing I'd like to point out is that many of our residents here at McVet are Vietnam-era vets. So
right.
Just because we pull the troops home, we pull out, we turn off the military effort overseas, many of our veterans will not reach that ultimate rock bottom for many years to come. So we're still in. One of the things I tell them as I leave our daily meetings oftentimes is stay in the fight. We're certainly not prepared for the female veterans and specific needs that they bring, but organizations such as Baltimore Station and, of course, McVet, we are doing everything we can, and we need your help and your constant recognition of the homeless issue among the veteran community.
Thank you for joining us.
That's such a wonderful point. And homelessness tends to be a lagging indicator among veterans. It also tends to be a lagging indicator with respect to the economy. So even as the economy's getting better, we know that down the road, as people don't get the supports that they need, they're likely to find themselves without a regular place to stay. You just look at the alarming rate of suicide among veterans in general, returning veterans.
Right.
And when people don't get adequate mental health services, they're likely to find themselves without a place to stay in the future.
We also have a good number of, unfortunately, families of veteran families, who are becoming homeless. And that tends to be among the more recent returnees who have difficulty getting readjusted into the civilian community, who may have all kinds of traumas, physical, mental traumas that they've experienced, and it has a terrible effect on their family as well. So it's not only the veteran himself or herself that's affected, but it's their family also that's affected.
So I'm curious about what we talked about earlier, and I was thinking about both of your stories that we just heard, Damien Housley and Bonnie Lane, and what you were saying, Kevin, about the growing numbers of people who are homeless, not because they're drug addicted or alcoholics, but because the bottom has fallen out. And that's become increasingly a reason for people being homeless, whole families, as you said.
Absolutely. And the longer and longer I do this work, I've come to realize that addiction and mental illness are huge societal problems that affect people at every socioeconomic level. And they may be exacerbating factors with respect to homelessness, make it really difficult to get out of it. But homelessness is primarily a symptom of poverty and a lack of affordable housing. 25% of all city residents lives at or below 100% of the federal poverty level. That's about $11,000 for a single adult, $23,000 for a family of four. A 38% mark of all kids in Baltimore City live in poor households, 38%. And we know that if you're a poor kid, all the research tells us, chances are that you're going to become a poor adult. We've got to address poverty. We've got to address the structural lack of affordable housing. We've got to address meaningful living wage jobs, adequate access to health care. That's how we address homelessness. It's really not all that complex. It's housing, health care, and incomes. We tend to make it. I think we're guilty as service providers sometimes of saying, "Oh, homelessness is so complex." Fundamentally, when our clients get access to those three things, we can end their homelessness. Why can't we do that as a community as well?
Why can't we do that as a nation? I mean, we're the richest country in the world. We have all these resources, and then we create policies, or we let developers get loopholes into policies to where they create or they tear down public housing programs. Or they create a development where they're supposed to build in affordable housing, yet they make all these backdoor and side door deals where they don't have to do that at all. It's like a lot of the systemic things create things to where people go into homeless, you know, it creates more homelessness. We have 47,000 vacant houses in Baltimore. According to the city, 4,088 people on any given night homeless, but we know it's a lot more than that, many more than that. I mean, they have the Vacants to Value program. They could do like a Habitat for Humanity. Homeless people have skills. A lot of them know how to paint. They know how to do something or could learn. You know, there are ways to solve the problem here in Baltimore and then to do it more nationally.
I mean, what you're raising here, I think, are some really important issues. I mean, I think that the large policy questions that you raised, I'm going to go back to the last thing you said, and I want our listeners to join here. So what you think at 410-319-8888 about how the city should be doing do things differently. The idea that developers, I mean, I will put it out there. I mean, developers should be, if it whatever projects developed in Baltimore should be mixed-use housing in terms of mixed-income housing. There should be X number of houses that are affordable homes for poor working people, for middle-class people, for upper-class, whatever they're building for, so that it's not just housing for the wealthy that we're building in the city, which is what we're doing. You know, what is Montgomery County? I think that whatever you build in Montgomery County, is it? I forget the exact number. It's like 14% of whatever development homes are built have to be built for affordable homes.
Have to be made available to people at a certain income level, exactly. Percentage of area, right. Median income.
Right.
Inclusionary zoning policies make an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean that's a huge issue.
And you know, affordable housing has been underfunded and in fact defunded in the United States. As the Reverend was saying, over the years he watched homelessness getting worse and worse and worse. We're spending today 40% of what we spent on affordable housing as a nation in 1979. 40% today. Is it any wonder that homelessness has increased over the past 30 years? To get out of it, we need to set new priorities. And it's not that we're not spending the money. Homelessness is costly. It costs more to maintain you or anyone else in shelter for the night than it does to maintain folks in permanent housing. It tends to cost a lot more when people show up in emergency rooms and show up in jails, getting arrested for living your private lives in very public spaces. We spend a lot already as a nation on poverty and homelessness. We can invest it differently and keep people stably housed and off the streets.
You say something, Amy?
When he mentioned living your private life in public spaces, I did that a couple times. So, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. I mean, I really do need this. Needs to end. This needs to end. Yeah.
I think that the other thing that you were talking about earlier, Bonnie, that you raised that we can come to after the break a little bit is the housing policy in Baltimore. I mean, all the abandoned and boarded up homes. There could be creative ways of doing that. I often said to the people who did Occupy Baltimore, I said over and over again to them when they were in the studios talking about why they were occupying downtown Baltimore, and I said, it's all well and good to occupy this little island. I think it's a lovely thing to do. To make people aware of what's going on, but why don't you get together with some poor folks and occupy some houses?
I'm a member of Occupy.
So occupy some houses, rebuild them, take them over.
There is a group called Occupy. There is a group called Occupy Our Homes, and different branches and people with Occupy are working with people that are being foreclosed on and evicted, and they do go in and occupy homes on occasion.
So your experience as a homelessness, a woman being homeless. Has made you into an activist.
Absolutely.
You may have found a home to live in, but that's not the end of the story,
that's
right?
That's not the end of the story. I've been housed for 3 years, but I'm advocating or activating every day.
Well, I want to hear much more about that, but we have to take a break here in a second. We'll come back to all this and to the phones. Andrea, the first caller up at 410-319-8888. On the way there, I'll remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's transplant program and becoming an organ donor is available online at umm.edu/transplant. We'll be right back to continue our conversation as we approach Homeless Persons Memorial Day. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Tomorrow is Homeless Persons Memorial Day. And before we get into that, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you are struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We are talking about homelessness today. Tomorrow is Homeless Persons Memorial Day. We know of at least 104 people who died on the streets. They'll be remembered at the memorial service tomorrow that Kevin will talk about again in a minute. We will be reading the names of all 104 people we know about at the end of this program, so their names are heard and not forgotten, that they are human beings who lost their lives, who at one time were somebody's baby, and they're gone and died because of homelessness. So we're wrestling with that today with our guests. Kevin Lindemuth is with us. He is the new president and CEO of Healthcare for the Homeless. He's been that since 2011 when he took over from the founder, Jeff Singer. And he began his career with Healthcare for the Homeless 20 years ago as an outreach worker. The Reverend Dennis Dorch is with us. He is a retired United Methodist minister, remains actively involved in the United Methodist Church, and started several outreach and service ministries for people experiencing homelessness, and continues to this day. Active member of the Baltimore United Congregation and SHARP, a local coalition of service providers, faith communities, and individuals working to raise consciousness about the structural solutions to homelessness. We're also with Bonnie Lane. Bonnie Lane is a local activist who was homeless. She's a member of Be More Housing for All, a grassroots organization of people experiencing homelessness and fighting to end it. On the editorial board of Baltimore's newest newspaper, Word on the Street, Baltimore's new street newspaper. A member of the local Face the Homeless Speakers Bureau, as is Damien Housling, who is still homeless, as an active member of Be More Housing for All, and the Face of Homelessness Speakers Bureau, and Word on the Street. 410-319-8888. And tomorrow night is happening where again? Let's get that out.
December 21st, first day of winter, the longest night of the year, 5 o'clock at the Inner Harbor Amphitheater. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake will be there to join us. Other community leaders remembering 104 people, as you mentioned, Mark, someone's baby, someone's mother, someone's father, someone's sister, someone's brother. These were people that had
like you and me, they're
lives,
like, they're us.
Rich,
they
full lives,
us.
Whose lives were cut far too short by the experience of homelessness. Some of them died while actually on the street. Some actually were in their own houses or apartments, no longer homeless. And yet we know that people who've experienced homelessness, it's an incredibly hard life, as you might imagine, are 3 to 4 times more likely than their house counterparts to die prematurely. We know many of the people on the list, and I'm proud to say that they were not homeless when they died. And when they were housed, their health improved. They got connected to care. They got connected to treatment. They reconnected with friends and loved ones in the community. And unfortunately, tomorrow we will be acknowledging that they left us far too soon.
There's also a great misunderstanding about the people who are homeless. These are often people who have great skills. They're well-educated. They have a tremendous resource that they bring to any endeavor that they might be involved in. If they are able to get a job, they're going to be very good employees and even leaders in communities and in business. They're people who have wonderful stories to tell and who offer great insight into human life. These are exciting people in many ways. Certainly, they experience all of the problems that come with homelessness, and there are problems of addictions, there are problems of mental illness. When we did a Goucher College seminar last fall about the connection between homelessness and mental illness, it's almost, is it the chicken or the egg, which comes first? You spend enough time on the street homeless, and you're going to develop mental problems
right,
as well as your physical problems.
Right.
But these are people of great worth, and they have a lot to contribute. And it's a joy to get to know them.
Let me go to the phones and come back to our guests at 410-319-8888. And Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Andrea. Welcome.
Well, I want to concur that anyone that's homeless, first of all, is a person. They're, just like you said, they're someone's mother, someone's father, they're a person. So anyone that works or deals with or volunteers, or if you're just passing by someone, just give them the simple courtesy of being nice. Because at the end of the day, they're a person with a heartbeat just like us. And whatever problems they're experiencing on top of homelessness is the same problem that all of us at some point have experienced or someone in our family's experienced. So it doesn't matter whether you have a house or not to end up with real-life problems. But one thing I wanted to comment was I love the Housing First logic model. I know that's not the end-all, be-all, but I like it, and I wish it was more in place in situations here without so many restrictions because it allows you to get into housing. It doesn't matter if you have an addiction or not. It's, you know, whether you have credit or not,
right.
It's just like, we need you to get housing. And then we'll deal with the other things as we come across those. And I think it works out. But the only thing, you know, a lot of people want, let's get you in a house now. Let's not invest the 3 or 4 to 5 years that it takes to kind of get you to your level of stability. And
so,
I like the fact that it addresses the person's level of stability, not what we feel like as a program monitor that their level
right.
of stability should be.
Kevin?
Andrea,
thank you so much, love.
Andrea, thanks for your call. That's a very important point. And we love Housing First, too. Housing First, I would submit, is more than just a model. It's a paradigm shift from the previous way that we've addressed homelessness as a nation. For 30 years, we've been addressing it using a housing readiness model, which essentially states that we find someone, we try to figure out why they're homeless, what's wrong with them, what's broken with them, and we need to fix it, right? Medical problems or addiction problems or mental health problems. And then after we've done that, we can make them ready to live in housing again. Well,
That's ridiculous.
That model never worked for the most vulnerable among us who stayed on the streets year after year and got sicker and sicker. What we find with Housing First, in 2005, we took 30 folks that were sleeping in the park at St. Vincent's at the base of the Jones Falls Expressway.
Remember
that? Moved them into housing. Today, Mark, 85% of that population still housed. We expanded it to an additional 60 people using a federal grant. 85% still housed and off the streets. When we house people right away, as the caller said, without regard to participation in treatment, folks, their health improves. They're more likely to get connected to treatment if they need it. They're more likely to be successful in treatment, and they're more likely to reconnect with others in the community. Housing is the solution to homelessness.
Go ahead.
I like the fact Andrea brought up credit, because while I was homeless, I was denied an apartment because my credit score was, I think, 5 points too low.
Are you serious?
Yes. So that's another issue with homelessness. They look at your credit scores, and if your credit score is not right, you're not getting housed.
When I struggled financially, I always paid my housing bill first. I didn't pay some bills, but my rent was always paid first. So
right.
My credit is probably gutter low right now. So, Bonnie's comment really strikes on there.
We don't consider housing a human right in this country. We don't consider health care a human right in this country. And it's not. And so people lack access to those basic human rights.
I mean, I think that this is we'll get to try to call us back here, 410-319-8888. We'll get you on the air. And I think that we're raising here some very serious issues. We did a show a few months ago about a family that was kicked out of public housing, Section 8. Because someone in their house, a son, was busted for drugs. So this policy is, to me, and we want to get back at the first of the year, get the housing department on and talk about it, is like utter madness. I mean, so you're not doing anything wrong, but your son is busted for drugs, and you're thrown out of the house. So you, as a couple, who this woman who has been clean for 13 years, and her husband, who's disabled, raising their 3 grandchildren, are now split up and separated across the city because they're tossed out of housing. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Makes no sense at all. And you articulated right there, Mark, how families get ripped apart when they experience homelessness. When people leave their homes, they tend to go into a service system that separates them. women and children over here, men over here in the mission. And what we often find when we help rehouse people is that families tend to emerge out of the woodwork. We tend to think we're working with a single adult. Well, there's a family there all along, and unfortunately, the violence of homelessness ripped that family apart.
So I'm curious what your thoughts are on how we end homelessness. We've had this commission that I've been a part of more actively than I have been in the last year, the Mayor's Commission on Homelessness.
Mayor's 10-year plan to end homelessness. That's right. we're about to celebrate that. We're about to celebrate the fifth year birthday. And though the resources certainly aren't there to implement it, the plan itself talks about the right things, Mark. The plan itself talks about housing, health care, jobs, and a meaningful safety net.
So I'm curious, Bonnie, you're
I'm sorry, I tried to
No, that's fine. That's cool. It's going okay on the show. So what was it that made you kind of have the kind of sarcastic laugh? And
there's a team of writers with Word on the Street. Once I found out about this 10-year plan, we started reading it and researching it and analyzing things and looking at what's working and what's not. And what amazes me is, like Kevin said, we're 5 years into the plan, and they have different things they're going to do, but it's like they've waited 5 years into the plan to do these things. Like, they're going to house 75 families. It's called 75 Journeys Home. So they're going to house 75 homeless families, which is a great thing. My question is, why is it 5 years into the plan? Why is it only 75 people out of 4,088? I just don't get it. Like, we can have celebrations. We can have Grand Prix. We could spend all this money on things that are wonderful and exciting and great, but do we need them, and what do we need more? We need housing.
That bathtub metaphor we were talking about earlier in the show, it's like emptying the bathtub with a teaspoon.
Tablespoon.
With the tablespoon, we'll be generous.
And a tea party spoon.
And then the water faucet is still running, though. So,
right.
Yeah, you house 75 families, and then 150 families experience homelessness during that same time period, and you've done very little in terms of ending homelessness.
So, okay, Dennis,
you also need to understand, I think, that a person who is working a full-time job, working hard, good, honest labor, at a full-time job, making the minimum wage, cannot afford a house in Baltimore.
Right. Anywhere in the country, actually. Yeah. Anywhere in the country.
You just cannot. That's not enough money.
You have to work three full-time jobs to afford market rent on a one-bedroom apartment here. Yes. He's absolutely right.
Yeah. You know, and until we restore some semblance of reasonableness to our salary scales, years ago, a man or a woman could work a full-time job, and they could take care of their family.
Right.
They might not live plush, but they could provide for their family a home, food, clothing, you know, and they could live together. That doesn't happen with our salary scales today. And we have got to address that issue as well as providing reasonable low-income housing.
Yesterday in this program, I think it was yesterday, I get my days fudged up sometimes, Corey McCrae was on the show, who founded the Best Democratic Club, a new kind of insurgent Democratic club in northeast Baltimore. He was president of the Young Trade Unionists Association. He's an electrical worker who grew up on the street corner, decided to get his life straight, and became an electrical worker, and has now become an advocate as well. And one of the things he's pushing for, and we're going to be talking about a great deal in this program, is raising the minimum wage in the state of Maryland so that people don't have to work two or three jobs just to take care of their kids. I mean, there's a real issues here that go to the heart of what changes society and makes it a more livable universe for everybody.
And we, using that word, Mark, we have to begin to change the conversation away from a minimum wage, away from what's absolutely minimum, and actually what it costs to live. The living wage, it's often referred to as the housing wage, what you need to afford housing in your community. We have to start looking at it in those terms if we're really going to provide meaningful resources to people. I think we would all agree that no one who's working full-time should be living in a homeless shelter. I think all your listeners would agree, and yet we've got that all over the city and all over the country.
We do.
I know of two people who stayed in the shelter I stayed in last night who are full-time workers.
Full-time workers.
Full-time workers.
And there's a man I talk to almost every Saturday who's was in jail. He's been looking for a job. I've turned him on to a place to get a job, but he's been homeless, living in a tent, clean, trying to live his life. And wants it. He said, even if he gets a job, he's not going to be able to afford a place to live. He'll still be living in his tent under some bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
the way the system is set up with the incarceration. It's like, especially if you have a drug crime and you go in, you go into jail and get released. You can't go back into a public housing program because of what you were talking about, like the lady with her son. You're excluded from the place you know, and then if your family lives in public housing, you can't go back there either. So. There needs to be something done other than the way the public housing program currently does things. And then, like, with the whole Section 8 list, we have, like, I don't know, maybe there was, like, 30,000 people on the list at one time, and the list is closed because there's nowhere to put people. I don't know what the answer to that is.
410-319-8888. Let's get another call in here before we have to wrap things up soon, because we have to spend time reading the names of those who died on our streets homeless. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Steiner. I'd just like to know, when there's a mentally ill person on the streets and it's obvious that they're mentally ill, they have a mental problem, and it's obvious to discern that they're homeless, when the police pick them up, do they have – they take them to Central Building, then what happens to them? Is it like a revolving door where they go to court and the judge just either puts them back on the streets or sends a mentally ill person to jail for whatever reason, or do the – does the police department have a person that can come out and say, well, we don't need to take this person to jail because they're mentally ill, if there's something to facilitate that? Thank you.
Kevin, who wants to answer that question?
Unfortunately, our mental health policy in the United States, we often deal with it through incarceration. As the caller mentioned, often about 30% of the people we see at Healthcare for the Homeless have a major Axis 1 diagnosis, major clinical depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. We have outreach workers. The city has outreach work staff. Baltimore Mental Health Systems has outreach staff that try to engage people into care, into the community. If someone's experiencing a major mental health episode, might be emergency petitioned to a hospital to see if someone requires intensive inpatient care. Often that person is released after being medicated back out onto the streets. Often the behavior of someone that's experiencing a mental illness might result in them being incarcerated, being behind bars for an unspecified period of time. The percentage of people experiencing mental illness that are now incarcerated, people behind bars, is extremely high. And recent events of just a week ago, Mark, have catapulted the issue of mental illness back into the public eye. And we need better mental health policies to provide sufficient care to people. Unfortunately, many extremely vulnerable people are not getting the mental health care they need and are staying on the streets, are sleeping on the streets, are dying on the streets.
We also end up not only putting somebody into the mental health system to have them evaluated and processed because somebody suspected that they were mentally ill, but after the 2 or 3 days and they're stable, they are, as Kevin said, put out. They're literally put out onto the street. They often have no place to go. Then no provision has been made for them. They're just out there again.
Put out on the streets. And alternatively, what we find is that when we're able to house people and help them get stabilized, help them stabilize on mental health medications if they need it, we find that people's health improves and they stay stably housed. Many of the people on this list that were housed when they died had a mental illness that left them on the streets for a decade or longer. And because they got access to treatment, to appropriate treatment, they weren't homeless when they died.
And Damien, I'm curious. Where will you go tonight?
Well, I was planning on camping out again. I could play Scrabble afterwards, I think, after the show, and then I'm probably going to camp out because I just don't I don't like getting sick. I don't like getting sick. And this man, either one bed next to me or two beds next to me last night did smoke, so I was coughing last night. So.
And I've been in homeless shelters. They're not, most of them are not very pleasant places to stay.
I would agree.
I mean, healthcare for the homeless is maybe an exception. There aren't many places that are that you want to stay. That's why so many people, I think, would prefer to camp outside. Why Dick Lawrence let people stay in the park next to the church?
We're not a shelter, but we have many people there during the day, and as Damien knows, there's no smoking inside.
We only have like 90 seconds. Would you want to give the where the events?
Councilman Carl Stokes just responded that he's joining us tomorrow night at 5 o'clock, the Inner Harbor Amphitheater, Homeless Persons Memorial Day, December 21st, first day of winter, longest night of the year. Come and join Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake and others as we read the names of 104 people who died far too early,
which we're about to do now. I want to thank Kevin Linda Mood for being here, head of healthcare for the homeless. Bonnie Lane and Damien Housing both have been homeless and both are homeless activists in this town to end homelessness. And the Reverend Dennis Dorsch, who's dedicated his life to end homelessness as well. Thank the four of you for being in the studio.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
We've been talking about homelessness for this past hour, how to end it, and what it's cost in the course of this year. This is Homeless Persons Memorial Day, every December 21st, 2012. Solstice. The following people were known by homeless service providers to have experienced homelessness in 2012. Some died of chronic illness or acute conditions not treated in time. Some died in the streets or while staying in emergency or transitional shelters. Some spent the last few months of their lives in their own apartments. Some were able to reconnect with family and friends before they died, but most died alone. But for a few, forgotten, and we'll remember them here today. And this may not be all of them. Many more may have died in the streets, as some have suggested. But these are the names of the 104 people that we knew, that we know, who died homeless in Baltimore in 2012. Herbert Algier, Clarence Allen, Brian Anders, Tyrone Bailey, Michael Beattie, George Bell, Rudolph Bell Sr., Wanda Blackwell, Daniel Boone, Eddie Boyd, Nancy Breeding, Davy Brooks, Ezra Bunch, Frank Burris, Garrett Carey, Mark Carter, Marcus Clary, Bruce Cook, Jonathan Cook, Benjamin Cunningham, Keith Davenport, Charles Davis, Nestor Devencia, Mary Elbeck, Mark Farmer, Melvin Fentress, Phineas Freeman, Tony Friend, Terry Garrison Dwyer, Gibbs, William Giles, Jackie Virginia Graves, Mark Greif, William Hamm, Alan Harris, Donna Haviland, David Heaps, David Hearn, Ralph Henderson, Nathan Hickson, Brent Hill, Arthur Hill, Daryl Harrell, Miss Isabel, Kenneth Jeffries, Charles Johnson, Kenneth Johnson, Michael Johnson, Sandra Johnson, Douglas Jones, Patrick Kearns, Cheryl Madden, Mark Midori, Murray Paul Mahon, Laura Mason, Bernard Matthews, James McCarty, Dante Moore, Philip Moore, Michael Moore, Carlos Morales, Ronald D. Morrison, Richard Mulbauer, Francis Norris, James Otlowski, Tanya Parker, Michelle Peterson, Melvin Powell, Derica Pratt, Carol Raymark, Kathleen Ritchie, Burnett Roan, Jereen Robinson, Alfredo Rodriguez, Reginald Rogers, William Roth, Milton Royster Sr., Michael Schillenberg, Annette Scott, Willie Schell, Michael Simon, Patricia Ann Shorty Morgan, Etise Smith, Sonny, Jerry Stewart, Eric Sullivan, Lizette Taylor, Lawrence Taylor, Dana Thompson, Charlie Tiller, Michael Toskos, Taryn Traham, Jillian Truvalley, Ruth Tucker, Ronnie Vaughn, John Wagner, Stephen Watkins, Ernest Wells, Osby Wiley, James Witherspoon, David Wright, Raymond Wright, Velma Wright, Denise Zarzour. On December 21st, National Homeless Persons Memorial Day, this first day of winter and the longest night of the year, we remember Mother Jones' words, to pray for the dead and fight like hell for the living. We recognize that the lives of the people listed here mattered and had meaning. We recommit ourselves to providing services, education, and advocacy necessary to prevent and end homelessness, and to the pursuit of a future in which health care is available, housing is affordable and accessible, and incomes are livable for all. You won't be forgotten here.